4 episodes, more than 100 hits, and a gazillion of laughter. Hello, hello, hello. Welcome to the 5th episode of the best podcast on Earth today. Die and bits, gushing or bashing. It's the other revolution that Marx and Engels did not see coming. I am Bits, and I am the more adorable, charming, prettier, but poorer other half of Die and Bits. The other half of this podcast is, of course, the alluring, the devastating like Odette. Bongacious, but not so Paris Hilton. Hashendera of Bigo City anymore. Die! Now, for our 5th episode, we will be more personal. Because remember, the personal is also political. Everything is political. Even Kidai's choice of where to eat brunch in Bigo City is political. Is she gonna eat at the siblings' gay men's karinderia for more queer turning? Or at the cancer survivors' karinderia for more social work awareness? Now, we will be talking about Trece. We are not referring to the problematic graphic novel that was later on adapted into a Netflix TV series. Trece, at least on our imagination, connotes nostalgia. Kidai and I both have a thing for nostalgia. To quote our dear Woody Allen, nostalgia is the painful denial, or nostalgia is the denial of the painful present. Now, our 5th episode is a journey to the past because it defines how we are today, how lavishing and sexy Kidai is right now. If you could only see how she looks like today, she's an apparition, a turning, an aesthetic, a moment. This 5th episode of Die and Bits is a nostalgic trip. We will be revisiting how Kidai lost her virginity on top of the pop culture moments that had a massive impact on us when we were 13, 13, not 14, 14, Dina Bonnevi. How we were when we were 13. What were there when we were 13. Bring it on, Kidai.
In 1983, I was 13. Okay. I could have chosen either Marudia's Bias Carnal.
Oh my God!
Okay. A period film about the damages of patriarchy, or Ismael Bernal's Broken Marriage.
Oh my God!
Which shows that a failing marriage is a microcosm of the failing social forces in the Marxist times. But I won't do that. Why? Because that's going to be a betrayal of my sensibilities. Instead, my 13-year-old self will probably choose Dani Shasita's To Love Again, starring Sharon Kinnear, and Miguel Rodriguez. In this Viva produced romance, Sharon is Rafaela Laperal, or as her friends call her, Rafi. And her parents are played by Dante Rivera and Lisa Lorena, okay? Don Enrico and Doña Clarita Laperal. The beginning of the movie, okay, Don Enrico gets a telegram. So this is all time specific. Millennials don't know what a telegram is, you know, okay? And apparently, his trade investments failed. So the failure caused him to kill himself, shoot himself inside the car, okay? And that happens to be the financial ruination of the Laperals. Now, Clarita Laperal has to save her family's fortunes. First, she goes to a certain Don Ramon, played by Charlie Davao, the father of Ricky Davao. Okay, so she asks money from him. But Mr. or Don Ramon has a condition. He can only give her money if she marries him. And she cannot do that because during their youth, okay, Ramon was Don Enrique's rival for her affection. So she goes to this other couple played by, I think, the forgotten Tony Carreon and Raquel Montesa. Okay. And Tony Carreon and the missus have this condition. Okay. They can give her the money for whatever Don Enrique owes the investors in one condition. Okay. Her daughter, okay, Sharon, has to marry the only son. Okay. Because according to them, they were not treated right by the high society because they're noble rich.
Interesting.
So Lisa Lorena comes back to the house and proposes this thing to Sharon, that in order for their family to reclaim their place in society, she has to marry the son of the couple played by Tony Carreon and Miss Montesa, and Sharon as Rafi is aghast because she still recalls the words of her father. And her father's advice was, you can only marry for love. And so she said this to her mother. What would happen after the wedding? Okay. And this is her words. I will become a beloved infidel.
Infidel.
Mm-mm.
My God.
But she reluctantly assents because her mother was so adamant about it. Because it's a choice between Clarita marrying Ramon or Sharon marrying the son of a prospective, the prospective business partners. Okay. And then Sharon, under duress, runs away. And next time we see her, okay, she's already in the forest, gun hunting, carrying a gun.
And a rebel.
She has a violent encounter with the goons in the forest. And this violent eruption, okay, I kid you not, is caused by her sneezing. One of the casualties, one of the wounded happens to be the character played by Miguel Rodriguez, because Miguel Rodriguez, smitten by Sharon Cuneta's looks in a bar, followed her to the forest. Now, ma'am, Miguel Rodriguez's character is brought in the infirmary. The infirmary in the forest. I couldn't possibly forget the word because the word infirmary is printed on the door. And for those who do not know what an infirmary is, that's just clinic with four syllables.
Yes.
Anyway, the forest or the infirmary doctor is panicking because Miguel Rodriguez's character's blood type is rare. But that is immediately solved because Shara knows that her blood is the same as Miguel Rodriguez's character. I keep on saying Miguel Rodriguez's character as if he has no name, man.
Yeah.
Because it's only maybe about 40 minutes in the movie that you know not his real name, but his nickname. And you know what his nickname is? It's Bullet. And why is it Bullet? It's because, let me quote. Sabi nila, my mom, when she was pregnant, was ambushed. There were 50 bullets. End quote. Thus, he is named Bullet.
Oh.
Okay. And several scenes pass. And the ending is kind of perverse.
Yeah.
We realize that Miguel Rodriguez's character, Bullet, Jose, and also Antonio, is the person, the son of the couple played by Tony Carreño and Raquel Montesa, that is Sharon is supposed to marry. And Lisa Lorena, is also going to marry Ramon in one of the more weird scenes in the movie. Lisa Lorena has clearly declared there should be a double wedding.
My God. What a plot, Kidai. What a plot.
Okay, I know. Because while relaying the plot, I was kind of confused myself. But that's about it. The bare bones of the plot. Okay. So, I think you want to know why I'm kind of in a mood by this movie in 1983.
And to tell you frankly, I haven't seen that film yet. No, I haven't seen that film yet. To Love Again. Although I know that it's a classic Sharon film, I haven't seen it yet. But I love Danny Zialcita. Based on your synopsis, it affirms that Danny Zialcita really has an eye for complexity. Diba? All of his films are really complex. The characters are so complex. Even the plot are complex.
Yeah. Ma'am, first, it features the reliable Zialcita ensemble.
Yeah.
Like Lisa Lorena, Dante Rivero, Odette Khan. Okay.
Yes, Odette Khan, the typhoon.
As the Cathy Tita. Suzanne Gonzalez. Okay. Charlie Davao. And Tommy Abuelo, who plays the drunk infirmary doctor.
attorney Tony Abuel. He's a lawyer.
Yes.
And he placed sixth in the bar exam.
And when you have this ensemble, and you get the wacky, wisecracking lines from Danny Shalsita,
yes.
It becomes something else. Sample. When Sharon gets a gift from Miguel, Odette Kahn's character has this to say. Mag-ingat ka ha, ang pain sa aso buto, sa dalaga tsokolate.
Which is true.
And I could possibly end this conversation with this very unusual banter. Okay. The stage directions are mine. The words are by Danny Shalsita. Okay.
Go.
Miguel Rodriguez bullet knocks on Sean Canetta's door. Okay. Sean Canetta opens it. And she says, "How did you find me?" Miguel, "I am a hunter." Sharon, "So you're a hunter? Ano ako? Ibon? Baboy damo? Pusa?" Miguel, "Flower. A beautiful flower." Sharon closes the door and says, "Thank you, but this flower has to sleep."
My
eat
God.
That, Rosabel Reyes. Eat that. And what else can I say? It's 1983.
Yeah.
Okay. And Sean Canetta is on the cusp of her mega stardom because during this time, she was crowned as Miss RP Movies by the Guillermo Foundation.
Mendoza, yeah. Guillermo Mendoza, Memorial Foundation.
The bestows, the box office queen and king awards to the actors and actresses who have made movies that are box office hits.
Yes.
So Miss RP Movies is some kind of a runner-up because the box office queen that time was Vilma Santos.
For which film?
Really? For many films.
But how about Ate Guy? What were her films during that time in 1983?
This is now we're having a
film lesson, a film history lesson. And Kirovsky died.
This is just based on Wiki, and Wiki is not so reliable because every time that Nora Honor is crowned as the box office queen, there's always a parenthesis that says citation needed.
Oh my God. What happened?
Anyway.
Historical revisionism. That's what we call historical revisionism.
Anyway, the year after this, Sharon made Sa Hirap at Ginhawa, Dapat Ka Ba Mahalin, and
for which she won an award, Bukas, a Best Actress Award, right?
Bukas Luluhod Ang Mga Tala. For which she not only won two Best Actress Awards, but she also replaced Vilma Santos as the box office queen in 1984.
Yes. Bituing Walang Ningning.
Yeah.
Right? Bituing Walang Ningning.
Now. I really find it so hard to convey why this film makes me so giddy. I can try words like, this is an amusing trifle,
yes.
This is a lovable folly, but the first realistic description of this movie is a mangling of Luis Buñuel's The Discreet Charm of the Bourgeoisie. Because, you know, with this glossy Viva melodramas, we get the discreet and indiscreet charms of the rich people in the Philippines. Okay, especially for those watching these glossy, so-called glossy Viva melodramas during this time. Okay, you can only silently that they're well, right?
Yes, I remember. I remember.
But if you really wanna look at it closely, okay, with a conclusion that the Laperals got the wealth back by inviting the other wealthier people in their community, and you know, wealth just spreading around the few. It's not the discreet charm of the Bolshevism that comes in mind. It's the other Luis Buñuel movie, The Exterminating Angel, in which the, you know, the elite couldn't quite leave the party.
Yeah. Even Jean Renoir, by the French filmmaker, Rules of the Game.
And it's like this. If you look at it closely, okay, through Danny Chancita's Wicked Lens, is also saying that, you know, you can knock them down a peg, Sharon Connaughton can go to the forest, okay, kill some obnoxious goons, but she will always go back to the arms of her economic status, and everything is gonna be okay for them, but not for the rest of us.
Yeah, definitely. And you know what? I'll cut you, because since you are talking about Danny Chalcita's film vis-a-vis or in relation to how he depicts, no, the petty bourgeois, diba? I remember a friend, she wrote an article about Danny Chalcita's Burgis criticism, because most of his films are about bourgeoisie. So my friend made a critique of Danny Chalcita's film titled Burgis Criticism in Danny Chalcita's Cinema. And it's a very good essay. It's a very good essay because in the 1970s and 1980s, we have focused too much on Lino Broca and Ismael Bernal, that we have totally forgotten their antithesis when it comes to filmmaking. And to me, their antithesis is actually Danny Chalcita, right? And Elwood Perez. At least.
And Joey Gosenfiao.
Yeah, right? Of course. Joey Gosenfiao, of course. And I want to have a third remake of Temptation Island. And I want you to play the character of Deborah Soon. The Yaya.
Anyway, Mom, I know this kind of stretch to invoke Luis Manuel when talking about To Love Again. But then, it came to my mind because there's an emotional incest involved in the movie.
Okay. Into Love Again.
Why? Okay. Why? There's this sequence in which Miguel Rodriguez asks Sharon Cuneta whether she has a boyfriend. And she says, no, I don't want to have a boyfriend because I'm still heartbroken. And then Miguel Rodriguez asks, why? Who is this guy? And then she says, it's her father. The suicidal.
Oh, that's very incestuous. That's so, very incestuous.
In a clever way. In a very clever way. Or maybe perhaps possibly unintentional. Chalcita invoked Buñuel. No, about the neurosis of the wealthy.
It's like a Carlitos Yon Reina film. Starred by Marisol Soriano. And Robert Arevalo.
But saner and more controlled.
I know. It's more controlled. Yeah. And it's not camp.
Yeah. Yeah. So, that's me. My 13-year-old self and my current self still worshipping Danny Chalcita's To Love Again.
Yeah, we love Danny Chalcita. We love Danny Chalcita. And we miss Danny Chalcita, right? We miss Danny Chalcita. There should be a critical reappraisal of Danny Chalcita's body of work, Kidai. Just like how there should be a critical reappraisal of your body. Diba? Because your body is a wonderland. Your body is a temple.
Now, when I talk about my body, I have... When I watched and revisited To Love Again, it was a riot. It was like a love fest.
But so let me ask you this. But let me ask you this. What was the theme song of To Love Again? Because I remember Sharon Cuneta has a song titled To Love Again, and it's one of my favorite songs. It was also sung by Odette.
The one written by Odette Quezada.
Yeah, I love
it. The movie is based on the song.
Oh.
And the particular emotional incest scene I was just talking about, okay, started with a prompt by Miguel Rodriguez's character. He asked Sharon Cuneta's character, "Why don't you love again?"
Oh my God. So the song was written by Odette Quezada.
Oh.
Yeah, and then it was sung by Odette, and then it was covered by Sharon Cuneta. Am I right? Oh, I love that song.
I think Odette gave it to her. Oh. And it's also 80s specific, ma'am, because the first two words are radio's fine.
Yeah, radio's fine. And Kidai is a bold star.
And it reveals that the rich also listen to radio during that time. But
their specific
radio stations are FM stations.
Yes.
So if you're like kind of like
the zeitgeist.
If you're in the middle and upper class strata, you listen to FM. But then if you're like, you know, rural and urban poor, you listen to AM.
You listen to Tutsu Sabuano songs.
No, the frequencies, the AM.
The frequencies, the AM. Yeah. But I have a question before we move on to my 13. Yeah.
Sure.
Sharon Cuneta also a music composer? Because I remember there's a song that Apple Music says it was written by Sharon Cuneta.
Yeah. The song is in my throat right now.
Now that you're gone?
Yeah, that's it.
Oh my God, that's a very beautiful song. So it was composed by Sharon Cuneta.
Oh, I'm 99% sure.
I'm impressed. It's a very good song. It was also sung by LMA Saison. Am I right? Now that you're gone.
I guess so.
Oh, anyway, what a talented human being Ate Sha is.
Yeah. What a singular personality in show business.
Yes.
I know there, in terms of singers, there are belters like Legend and others. But there isn't quite a voice like hers. Where singing is concerned. Lani Misalusha can only parody, but not impersonate.
A Sharonian said, thank you, Kidai, for being a Sharonian.
And Chelsea Tarshan.
I know. I was just curious. When you were 13, did you imagine yourself playing the character of Charito Solis in Karnal?
I'm more like her grandmother, the sister of Philip Salvador.
Oh, I forgot her name. Maita Martha Salvador.
Amir Bangsa. Me too.
Yeah, I forgot her name. Yeah, but anyway,
I think you need a bell now to make you go back to your 13-year-old self, your 13.
But first of all, thank you, Kidai, for affirming your age. You're a Lola. No, thank you for affirming.
I'm golden.
Your age. Golden. Now. Oh, what's that? Let me get it first. Now. It was the worst of times and best of times. People were still waving over the new millennium. We have reached a new millennium. Some were still afraid of the millennium bug. Everyone was still riding on a wave of euphoria. May 2020, a pop singer released an album that will mark a tremendous impact on the consciousness of many millennials, including mine. Although I don't consider myself a fan, I am more of a genie in a bottle baby fan, because I feel like I've been locked up tight for a century of lonely nights waiting for someone to release me. The release of this particular pop star's album was a hit. It defined the pop music of 2000. And of course, I am referring to Britney Jean Spears' second studio album titled Oops, I Did It Again. I was 13. I was young, reckless, and already a faggot. I already knew I am gay because I dreamt of kissing Cokie Domingo, who was so cute in Death Row. And I also had a crush on Robin De Rosa. He was so hot. In Ed Lejano's pito-pito film titled Sabado ng Gabi, Linggo ng Umaga. I don't know if you're familiar with that film. It was starred by Robin De Rosa and Nicky Ferriols. Diba? It's a very simple film, but it has an impact on me. I remember I dreamt of marrying someone like Robin De Rosa, no, back then. No? And then I dreamt that we will have a house in a posh village somewhere in Makati. In short, I dreamed the dream in 2000. I was 13 in 2000. And that was a time of innocence. That was a time of dancing to the tune of Oops, I Did It Again. And in July 2000, it wallowed in my loneliness as a young faggot through the song Lucky. At 13, I felt like an undiscovered superstar like Valentina in RuPaul's Drag Race Season 9. Delusional, but undiscovered superstar, right, Kidai? I felt that the world is spinning and I keep on winning. But tell me, what happens when it stops? Thank you, Brittany. You are an icon. You are my trese. You know what, Kidai? Now looking back, 20 years later, I felt so many things have changed. We now have Taylor Swift and the Generation Z are now crying over the 10-minute version of All Too Well. And then I realized 1990s and early 2000 were an era. They were moments of gold and they were flashes of light, to quote Celine Dion. It sounds like a Celine Dion song, right? Yeah. But seriously, Kidai, it was the best of times and the worst of times. Britney is my trese. Britney is now free. Britney is emancipated. And Kidai is still delusional. Wow. What say you, Kidai? What is all your most favorite Britney song?
You are not toxic, but there should be a movement that's yes. going to be called Free Bits.
Free Bits. I want to be emancipated and because I should have an album still, titled The Emancipation still, of Bits.
Yeah. She's still suffering from the shackles of academia.
Oh my God. I hate academia. I hate academia. But what is your favorite Britney song?
Ooh. It's a song that you just mentioned. It's not so much about the song, but the video. It's Lucky.
Yeah, in which it's a very good song.
In which the persona has gotten an Oscar and other awards, but she's still not happy. So yes. She's not lucky.
Yes, and one of my favorite lines in there is the line that goes like, "The world is spinning and she keeps on winning, right? But tell me what happens when it stops." It's so powerful. Yeah. It's so explosive, Kidai, right? But you know what? My most favorite Britney song is "Every Time." It's a ballad. No, the song "Every Time." Mm-hmm. I think that was her song for her child, if I remember right. I'm not sure anymore, but that's my favorite Britney song. But Britney, she was an era. She was a moment in the late 1990s up to the early 2000s. That's why I chose Britney. I really am not a fan of Britney. I'm more of a Christina Aguilera fan. But when I was 13, it was Britney. Britney was there.
Okay.
Her album, Oops, I Did It Again, had a tremendous impact in my generation. Yakidai.
I have a very Pinoy pop culture connection with Britney because sure. I know for one thing that Josephine Banig Roberto,
yeah, I remember her,
won over her in a TV competition show.
Oh, yeah, I remember Banig. Yeah.
Oh, and then of course, when I first listened to the hits, like "Oops, I Did Again," the sound, the voice coming out of the mouth, at least based on the video, is kind of weird for
me. Auto-tune.
Yeah, but when later on, like 10 years later, when I watch the video of her participating in that competition, hers is really a singer's voice.
Yeah.
She has a very good singing voice. It was just during the "Oops, I Did It Again" era, it was just transformed, possibly polished mechanically to adapt to the sound that the producers want to get. So This is like a lesson to singers anywhere, or especially singers who want to have a global appeal. Even if you have a voice, but if you don't have a sound, you won't make it in the pop market.
Yeah, I agree. I agree with you. Yeah.
And that's not disparaging the pop culture, the pop music scene. It's just like the pop scene doesn't need your typical mellifluous amateur reality competition singing voice. Look at Lea Zalonga, fresh from her Miss Saigon set. She did a pop album, but she didn't make it. I think it didn't even reach the top 100 because she didn't have a sound. Unlike, say, Rihanna, whom we can easily dismiss, not a good singer, but listen to a Rihanna production. When you talk about a pop record, it's the production, bitch. It's not about what you sound.
Perhaps, Kidai, it also has something to do with the producer, the one producing the songs, right? Yeah. Because they're also the ones who make the sound, right?
Yeah. It's just in the singer's hands.
Yes. It's or in the hands of the producers.
Singer's singing skills.
Yes.
Actually, a pop record is a collaboration.
Yeah. I mean, please do not bash us, but Sara Geronimo is Sara Geronimo because Viva Records knows how to package Sara Geronimo. And they have given Sara Geronimo the best songs that a music composer can compose. Diba? Like, for example, Forever's Not Enough. Diba? It's a very good song. Diba? I mean, it was composed, if I remember right, by Venisa Tornoy. So it's a good song.
Yeah. Okay. The pop music sound changes. It's not like Ray Valera is gonna give a song to Sarah Geronimo, and it's gonna be a hit. It's just like two or three decades ago where it happened to Sharon. Mm. And the sound of Ray Valera was still bankable.
Yeah. Agree with you, Kidai.
And how did you feel when Britney was finally freed?
Well, I was happy for Britney when she was freed, diba? Kasi parang she was so oppressed by her relatives. Diba? She was so oppressed and she was so kawawa.
And mom, so I was happy. Also, something so wrong about the law. Right?
Yes, about the law. Oh. I felt for Britney. Yeah, I felt for Britney. She was oppressed. She was oppressed. I remember Amy Winehouse, especially how, what she went through, with her family, with her father, diba?
And with her fame.
Yeah, with her fame. That might be one of the reasons why she abused, diba? She abused her, not just her body, but even her drug intake, right? Yeah. Hi. That is life. That is pop culture. Kidai. So Britney is my 13. Not the 13 graphic novel, but the 13.
Which that we are talking about, by the way. And Danny Chalceta's To Love Again is my beloved 13.
Oh, by the way, I was actually torn between Britney and Ate Regine Velasquez's performance in Manila Peninsula in 2000. Do you remember that? The millennium, in the new millennium, she sang at the Manila Peninsula on top of the fountain in Manila Peninsula while singing a song that was a moment too. Yeah. So. But I'm more inclined in choosing Britney because I think Britney defined 2000. Through her album, Oops, I Did It Again.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So there you go, Kidai. Britney and Danny Chalceta.
I'm the person that worships celebrity, but I am also aware that celebrity destroys celebrity. And now I wish that Britney Spears can get her sanity back.
Yeah, I'm fervently wishing to see the silver lining for Britney Spears. Mm. Diba? Yeah, I feel for Britney. Yeah, I mean, I wish her all the best, although I'm a Christina Aguilera fan. I love Christina, and I just watched her in the first episode of RuPaul Season 10. She was a guest judge, right? Christina is the better singer.
In which she almost, I think she did that. She out-camped Lady Gaga.
Yeah.
Belting on the stage.
Yeah.
True.
But to me, Kidai, Christina Aguilera is the better singer than Britney Spears. Do you agree with me or not?
She has a wider range, and I think she is more emotionally stable.
More emotionally stable. Yeah, more emotionally stable.
Because the fate was somehow unkind to Britney Spears.
To Britney.
So we couldn't possibly listen to the records that Britney could have done had she been saner.
Mm. Okay. But do you remember the Grammys fiasco? When Christina won over Britney, do you remember that?
Yeah. And yeah, both you and I are into awards, but at the particular time, and knowing Britney's condition, it's so harsh to pit one girl against another when they still didn't know about the repercussions of things like awards.
Thank you, Judith Butler. Thank you, Simone de Beauvoir, for championing feminism. What?
Thank you for bashing my earnestness.
I know. Thank you, Inday, for your feminist turn tonight, for this episode, for our fifth episode, Inday. Diba?
Yeah. So, let us invoke Call Me By Your Name by calling a worthless spirit. Thank you, Brittany.
Thank you, Danny Jalsita.
Bye.
That's all for now, guys. Thank you very much for listening. Happy holidays and stay safe. Omicron is here, but Kidai is deadlier. Remember that. Love you all, everyone. Watch out for our sixth episode. We're going to shoot it next week. I'm sure that you have all missed us. So don't worry. This is our fifth episode, and next week we're going to upload our sixth episode. If you have any suggestions on what you want to be our next episode, kindly send us an email or tweet us. No? So you have our social media account. So that's all for now. Thank you, everyone. You have any last thing to say, Kidai?
Au revoir.
Yes.